European Security and Stability Advisory Committee came up with, which to some degree can be interpreted as replacement of the WIS protocol. So we will go through the report so we get, so everyone in the room sort of understand where we are, and but the goal is to try to have as much time as possible for discussions later on. And also, we try to push forward to the discussions because we take for granted that people actually are relatively up to date on the on where we are. So the WHOIS, and I intentionally just say WHOIS here, is important for the internet community. That is something we hear all over the place. But one of the things which is the problem, of course, is that people just say WHOIS, just like I said on the first bullet here, when in reality we might talk about the protocol, the database, the oh, interesting. The fans just stopped. Oh, what a relief. Anyways, let's go on. So people might mean many different kind of things. And one of the findings that we try to emphasize in this last document that we wrote is that the fact that people are not clear enough on the terminology, that by itself makes discussions so difficult, so it's probably a barrier to be able to move forward and solve any of the problems. Okay. So ESSAC has produced a number of advisories related to WIS, 27, 33, 51, etc. And this is 51 that we are talking about that try to sort of compile this. And then as a result of that report, ICANN board tasked the staff to produce a roadmap to implement the recommendations. And here is sort of the roadmap. That at the moment we have a draft roadmap posted for public comment on 18th of February, and then we have the workshop which we are currently in. So with that as a background, Jim, maybe you can dive more into the report.
Thank you, Patrick. Next slide. So very quickly, the reasons why this document came into existence and ESSAC chose to address this issue was just that WHOIS discussions, WHOIS is a term which is used very generically by many communities and in many contexts. And we think that this really is part of the problem with talking about WHOIS. There is, so we kind of took a step back and looked at offering a set of recommendations that we thought would help to ground the discussions by being able to split them apart into the multiple pieces that people always talk about and thus separate the communities and the discussions. And we're very hopeful that this will help to progress these discussions. Next slide. So there are essentially three elements that we are proposing. The first, of course, is domain name registration data. This is actually the elements that are necessary for supporting the lifecycle of a domain name. And I think that these are in and of themselves, in some sense, fairly well understood. There are even some issues here in these discussions, but they're defined by the EPP protocol. They're defined by what is currently in contracts, in registrar contracts with ICANN and registry contracts with ICANN. So there's a fairly well-known quality to what actually is the data that is represented when you're talking about WHOIS. The second thing is domain name registration data access protocol. In the technical context, WHOIS refers only to this. This is the actual protocol, and this would be the WHOIS protocol as it's defined today, and that's what's used for the display of registration data. And what we want to do is identify a separate term, separate from WHOIS, for referring to this so that we can then talk separately about a different kind of access protocol in order to support other requirements which are now coming into existence, most notably, of course, IDNs. The third element in this taxonomy in trying to structure these discussions is the registration data directory service. And this is where we can talk about the requirements of what needs to happen when you need access to the data. So the WHOIS protocol today would be the access protocol. You need a mechanism for simply retrieving the data. Once you have the data, you need to talk about who gets to see that and under what circumstances they get to see it, and through what mechanism it might be that they get to see that. So it allows us to look at, you know, law enforcement as a separate community which has its needs in getting access to data. You have intellectual property communities which have their needs in getting access to data. You have the public which has its needs in getting access to data. It would be in this taxonomy name that one would have discussions about privacy and proxy services. So what kinds of walls or access restrictions that you might put on the data, the requirements on what needs to be there. And next slide. So some observations about the structure of these WHOIS discussions and these three taxonomy elements. There is actually no uniform data model today for what, in fact, is registration data, and we simply make that observation here. So having a term in which to talk about that is a good thing. There is, as I said, there are some sources that identify what is registration data, but it has not actually been collected and put together and given that name and that label and from which you can derive all of the rest of your communications. An important observation, of course, and I think we all recognize this, the WHOIS protocol as defined today, the access protocol that we all use today for looking at registration data, of course, is no standard for handling non-ASCII data. The standard itself is defined really just to be ASCII-based. There are a number of solutions out there. Different registries have done some things to provide some IDN access in particular to data, and in fact to be able to display data which is internationalized inside of that registration data. But again, not a standard. And of course today, directory services do not satisfy other legitimate needs for access to those services. So as I described, you have different communities of people, law enforcement, intellectual property, the public. There are always privacy and proxy concerns. There are no uniform guidelines for what those people, how they should get access to the data and what it looks like. And so we think that it's important if you separate out the discussion of what is the data, the protocol that you use to access it, then you can separately talk about the kinds of access that different groups of people might have, and you can set those discussions off and have them separately for those groups. Next slide. So we have three specific recommendations, and very quickly, obviously recommendation one was to adopt the terminology that we're proposing. Second recommendation is, in fact, to explicitly evaluate and adopt a replacement access protocol. And so to call out that particular action item and task. You hear a lot of rumors about that being necessary and needed, but let's make it an identified work item and find a way to make that happen. And then, of course, the third thing is to develop a uniform and standard framework for accessing data so that we can really begin to address the needs of these other legitimate communities who have legitimate need and access, should have legitimate access to this data. We can look for solutions that meet their needs and still meet the needs of the rest of the community, and, of course, any other privacy concerns that come about with having registration data. I believe that's it. Next slide. Yes, thank you.
I'm Andrew Sullivan, and I am talking a little bit about what's going on in the IETF. I want to emphasize for the record that I do not speak for the IETF or any working group there. These are my personal views about what's going on in the IETF, because people in the IETF get very sensitive if you talk about what they think. Next, please. So we have in the IETF, we are attempting to replace, we're attempting to promote a protocol to replace the WHOIS protocol. And this is called WIRDS. It stands for Worthwhile Extensible Internet Registry Data Service, because the IETF likes to have cute acronyms. This is broadly aligned with the CRISP requirements, which were published a number of years ago in response to the last time we went through the WHOIS pane. This is RFC 3707, and you can read that if you like to. But the idea here is that this is going to be REST-based for easy implementability. So you all maybe know what REST is, but if you don't, it's basically a way of producing web services so that you just, you know, query across, query a URI, and you get back an answer. And this means that the entire structure could be built fairly easily. Next, please. We had a BOF in Taipei. A BOF is a Birds of Feather session, and Birds of Feather sessions are designed to assess the community consensus about whether a working group is going to get set up. So the IETF procedure is that you have this BOF, and then you decide whether people are going to work on this thing, and if they are going to work on the thing, then you create a working group, and if you're not sure, then you don't create the working group. There was very, very strong agreement in that environment to do work on internet numbers. So, like, you know, the other WHOIS consumers, of course, are the RIRs, and RIRs use WHOIS in order to publish network number blocks and all the rest of that. So the real work behind WIRDS got started because the because Aaron and actually other RIRs started trying to replace this, and Aaron has a testbed standing. I think LACNIC does, and RIPE has one. Yeah. So there's more than one testbed in the RIR world, and there's very, very strong agreement and favor or strong agreement in the room about doing that. But there was a lot of pushback about doing work on domain names. Now, part of this is because there weren't a lot of registries or registrars in the room, but part of this is because we've got a history in the IETF of having done this before, right? There are already three replacements of WHOIS protocols. And none of them have been implemented, and therefore people are a little skeptical that this time it's going to work. There's no agreement right now on proposed charters, and but it looked like we were making some progress on the WIRDS mailing list, and therefore we're going to have another BOF in Paris. It's very important to understand something about the IETF procedures. There is a, so far as I know, never yet violated rule that you can have a third BOF. You cannot have one. So this is basically our last chance. If we don't get chartered to do this work now, there won't be a working group. Next, please. So this is the point I was just making. There's a maximum of two BOFs. There is a problem that we have right now, that there just hasn't been that much work on names. ICANN has, because of the work of Francisco and Steve, has a testbed and has a draft, and it's been active. But there hasn't been that much progress on names, unlike on numbers, right? We've got several testbeds on numbers. We've got competing drafts. People are definitely, they're converging on something. And on the names, there's a lot of question. The previous work means that there are people around the IETF who think that ICANN will never get organized about this and that the names community cannot come to an agreement and therefore we shouldn't do any work on it. And I would like to prove them wrong, so I would like people to come and participate on that. Therefore, next, please. There's this important thing that we need to understand. We have this slogan, right? Rough consensus and running code. So the rough consensus is seeing that people are doing work on these things. We have comments on the mailing list. We have evidence that people are, in fact, converging on a solution. If you've ever managed any kind of project, you know that when your employees come to you and they say, I've got this really great idea and I have no idea if it's ever going to work, you're going to tell them, well, come back when you're ready, because I'm not giving you, a bunch of my time in order to do that. But if they come and they have a plan for how you're going to get there, then that's the kind of thing that you're going to you're going to support. Similarly, in the IETF, the area directors, who are basically managers of the working groups, what they're going to say is, you people seem to have an idea of where you're going, therefore I'm going to support your work. You people over here, however, you're too fractious. I think that that's going to cause me a lot of work, so I'm not going to agree to it. That's really what's going on there. The other thing that's very, very valuable in the IETF is the running code part. So if we see evidence of people doing work on these things, we see evidence of test beds, we see those kinds of things, that's the kind of project that a lot of people get excited about around the IETF, because they say, we can make this work really well for a lot of people. You know, the IETF is good at sort of suggesting how interoperation is going to work, but it's not very good at blue sky kinds of problems. Another important thing to remember, work is officially done on the mailing list. If you can't make it to Paris, it's not the end of the world. Next, please. So here is the mailing list. That list there, weirds@ietf.org. If you want to subscribe, please do. You can follow that URL, and it will get you to all of the drafts that have ever been submitted about this topic. And there, there's the subscription link there, but that's also where you can get to the archives. I really want to emphasize something. It's very valuable to see reviews of drafts, to see people saying, I have read this and here is a comment. That's much more valuable than hearing, I plan to work on this in the future. Planning to work on it in the future is a nice sentiment, but it doesn't provide evidence that there's work being done. whereas the work being done is real evidence to an area director that, hey, those guys are going to do the work. They're not going to create problems for me. I think that's all I had to say. I should say, please do come and participate. We would appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. This is Francisco Arias from ICANN. I'm the GTLD technical liaison. Just wanted to add a little bit about the drafts. There are various drafts from the RIRs, and there is one that we have wrote, but it's not just Steve and I. There is also, starting on the second version, we had another two co-authors, one from ISE, another from CNIC. So there we are trying to make this bigger. So now I'm going to talk about a little bit about the draft roadmap. This is the direction of the board. The board requested staff to write a roadmap to implement SAC 51. The current environment, what other things are linked to this effort that had happened in the past? There is GNSO, who is service requirement report that is was published a few months ago. It lists various requirements for quiz. It's very similar to what has been published elsewhere, for example, in RFC 3707. There is also a joint GNSO and ESAC Internationalization Registration Data Working Group. They just published the final report. I think the slide is not correct, Jim. It's final report, right? There is a similar recommendation in this final report to replace WHOIS. And we also have the WHOIS policy review team. This is part of the reviews described in the affirmation of commitments for ICANN. And they released a draft report which has two interesting recommendations related to this effort. They recommend to internationalize the WHOIS service, and they also go beyond that and suggest the inclusion of a requirement to offer this internationalized service in contracts for GTLD registries and registrars. This is, of course, in draft and is still being discussed. Regarding the roadmap that we published and is still for public comment, what we are suggesting on the first recommendation from SAC 51, which is related to the new terminology, where we think this is a simple thing. We believe we should provide a summary of the terminology recommended and share that with ICANN staff and other stakeholders through the supporting organizations and advisory committee chairpersons. We are thinking that it should be a transition period in which the preferred terminology in documents will be included, but also incorporating then the old terminology so people can get used to the new terminology and understand better what is being said in the report. The other two recommendations from ESAC, we believe, can be summarized in replacing the WHOIS protocol. And here we are proposing a multi-pronged approach. First, we think ICANN should promote the participation of CCTLDs, ETLD registries, and registrars in the development of the replacement protocol in WHOIS in the ITF. In the policy side of ICANN, we believe there should be probably a GNSO PDP with participation from CCNSO, ESAC, and ALAC to replace the WHOIS protocol. We also think that since PDP might take some time to develop, probably would be a good idea to start including or negotiate the inclusion of provision to operate this new protocol in GTLD registries and registrars as appropriate. For example, for GTLD registries, the ones that are more known to me, they have contracts that expire from time to time. We have two or three every year. So during the negotiation of those contracts, we could have a negotiation to include this new protocol included in the contract. And finally, we believe ICANN should promote the adoption of the this replacement of WHOIS within CCTLDs. Within CCTLDs, there is no policy mechanism, there is no option to do a PDP to require CCTLDs to do something like that. So the only mechanism in order to reach to CCTLDs is to promote the voluntary adoption of the replacement protocol. And this is a graph that tries to explain the timeline of the roadmap. As I mentioned before, we will have first the GTLDs that are willing to adopt the provision to replace WHOIS that could be started immediately. And then we will have the development of the protocol in parallel with the promotion of ICANN with CCTLDs, GTLDs, and registrars to participate in the ITF. Then we believe that there could be the first deployment by the first adopters and in the two sides, the GTLD and the CCTLD space. Then at some point, the PDP will conclude, and hopefully that would say GTLD registries and registrars will have to adopt the new protocol, then the remaining of the GTLD registries and registrars will deploy the new protocol. So what are the next steps in terms of the roadmap? As I mentioned before, this is still for public comment. The public comment ends on next Sunday. However, by the new rules of the public comment that started this year, we will have a reply period that will end on 18 April. We already have some interesting comments in the public forum. There is the URL in case you are interested in submit any public comment. Because of the importance of this topic, we are envisioning that there will be a second version of the roadmap that will be published sometime between April and May, and so it will be a second public comment period, and we think that we will be in time to finalize the roadmap, so there could be a board and community action by in time by the PRAC meeting at the end of June. And this is it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we are on time. Excellent. So with that, I would like to open up for 35 minutes of discussion.
Really loud. All right, gentlemen, my name is Michael Pettimores. I'm president, CEO of Linux Magic, and we do a lot of work with the WHOIS technologies on a lot of different areas. I guess you could say it's closely aligned to some of the requirements you may have from law enforcement. One of the important things is that we use mass WHOIS queries, and we have to be able to, of course, do large-scale audits. You may have cases where, for instance, one of the common things is in spam protection, where one person may be using thousands of domains, and we need to look for similar patterns or the similar owner for these domains. And what really concerns me is a couple of things. Number one, of course, is ensuring, and this is going through a lot of the different programs, ensuring that the owner is always made public and freely accessible. As we say, when a person's asking for a public IP or a public domain name, they should be able to at least put a public face on it. So this is one thing that we believe should be a strict requirement that gets observed through all three processes. And the other thing is that we're really concerned about some of the web-based protocols. Although this may satisfy the general public who may like to find out who owns a specific domain, some of these web-based REST API-style protocols may not be as easily incorporated in other technologies or perform as well for large mass queries. Thanks.
Jim?
So, in fact, it was exactly those kinds of issues that prompted, you know, production of SAC 51, because I think what's interesting is the if you separate out the directory service itself, you've identified, you know, at least two communities of access that you want for that and things that you want to do for it. And our observation in that is that those don't need the same kind of solution. You can have multiple solutions to the problem of display of data. So, I mean, Andrew will tell you about what's going on in the IETF, and yes, that's a relatively focused point of view in a particular type of directory service based on a particular kind of protocol. But one of the reasons for separating out the discussions between the protocol and the service is you can have different protocols to support different services. And we want to encourage the discussions to go in that direction as opposed to focusing on one protocol and one solution, right? One of the problems with WHOIS is you say WHOIS, you've only got one protocol available to you, one display mechanism, and we're trying to build stuff on top of it.
No, we need to use a microphone. Andrew first.
But you should get the microphone to follow up. The point of the protocol replacement proposal is in fact that it would be easier to build those services rather than harder. The problem that you have today with port 43 WHOIS is that it's essentially a bag of bits. You make a query and you get back this like pile of stuff on the wire, and you don't know what order it's going to be in, you don't know what data is going to be in there, you don't have any data model whatsoever. So part of the goal of WHOIS, in fact, is to bring structure to all of that so that it's a machine-readable output format. And on top of that, of course, you can build these other services. You don't like the thing that comes back in, you know, from wget, then you can produce yourself a different kind of thing. It's a machine-to-machine protocol, really, that it just so happens will fit nicely into an HTTP type of response. The reason we don't want to follow the look, we could today replace the WHOIS protocol with IRIS. We already have specified this thing. We could do it with our WHOIS. We've got lots of technologies for these things. They were all failures technically because nobody deployed them. We believe that part of the reason nobody deployed them is because all of the clients in the world had to be replaced, and you needed a brand new server, and you needed to understand the transport. Therefore, we're going to get rid of the understand the transport part by saying, you all know how to use, you know, HTTP libraries. That's easy to do. Any junior programmer can do that. There's a million libraries out there to do it, so that's very easy. And everybody's got a web browser, so that's very easy. So now we don't have the client or the server problem. And if you're writing an automated machine like you are to receive those WHOIS queries, you can do that as a web client, pull the things back in. You don't have to render it, of course. What you're going to do is process the underlying data instead.
Well, just say everything that I wanted to say about the machine-readable code and everything. So, yes.
Sorry, just to maybe make it a little more clear, I've actually almost heard kind of two opinions right in there while you were talking. As you mentioned, if there's multiple protocols that can access the same data, that's something I believe that I think will be more accepted. The people who have the requirements for a simple, clean, fast WHOIS can still use it, and the people who have other additional would could be able to use, say, a new REST API model, which may, you know, have different, whether it's performance vectors or things of this nature. I would like to see in the recommendation or a clear opinion when you say, is this a replacement? Will we maintain the ability for, as we improve the data model, can we not maintain both the standard WHOIS 43 protocol and look at this as an additional protocol?
Francisco.
Thank you, Patrick. I just wanted to clarify one of the things that you mentioned about the data that should be in the protocol. I just want to clarify, or in the service, should I say. This is only about the protocol. This is not about what data should be there. That's governed by the contracts that the GTLDs registries or registers have, or by the local policy that the CCTLD has. So this is not about changing that. Just wanted to clarify that.
Andrew?
Andrew again. I did want to respond to that. Are we going to keep port 43 WHOIS? God, I hope not. That protocol is broken. It is awful. It's been broken for more than 10 years, much longer than that, really. It's designed for a different environment. We should get rid of it.
Jim?
And just one quick point of clarity. It was not my intention to at all sound like I said something different than what Andrew said in my initial response. So to speak to the issue of multiple protocols or one protocol, I'm just suggesting the door is open for that discussion if it happens to work out that way. And other than that, we'll see where the community and what you know, engineering, where engineering takes us.
Okay, Mark.
So this is Mark Costers. I'm the CTO of Aaron, and we actually deal with numbers, but we also serve up a Whois service. And one of the things that we did is about a year ago, we put out a RESTful API and essentially built upon that RESTful API a Whois interface as well. So you can come off of port 43 or port 80 or soon 443 if you want it SSL transport. What we've found through this is that people are moving from port 43 to the RESTful interface. So much, in fact, that we over 50% of our traffic is now going to port 80 and soon 443. So we're seeing the consumers actually voting with the with traffic what we're seeing, and they're we're seeing immediate use of people building on applications that use this, and it's really quite amazing. So we anticipate port 43 going away.
And there was a person there in the back.
Hi, I'm Jordan Buchanan, just representing myself. So you know, thinking about this and looking back on, you know, as you guys have noted, this is tried this before and hasn't really gone that well. And you know, I was reflecting on that. Certainly, one of the reasons why is that you know it requires you know big changes in clients and servers, and that's annoying. And that's I think coupled with the fact of like what are the benefits we get out of the change, right? And I think so far they haven't been compelling enough to justify people to you know to gut their systems and try to start over with something. And I'm not sure we're. I mean, it strikes me that we're not hitting the mark here either. It's likely I'm not at all convinced from seeing this and from having watched Whois for a long time that we're going to get, you know, this is going to be a better solution that, you know, it's going to get more adoption than some of the stuff we've done in the past. If the point here is to support IDNs, you know, great. I think it seems like a heavyweight change in order to accomplish that, but, you know, maybe Mark's right and people really want RESTful, that's great, and if we switch to something that's RESTful and we're just trying to solve that problem, cool, right? That seems like a totally tractable sort of problem that we can solve in this space, and then we should just say that's the goal. If the purpose is, though, to try to, like, address this much broader set of issues in the domain community about, you know, what is, you know, what's Whois data, what is being used for, who's allowed to use it, and so on. It's way premature to try to solve those problems without any consensus from the community about what the solutions are supposed to look like, and we're nowhere near that consensus. And I think more importantly, we're not, it doesn't seem like, you know, there's concepts that, we're replicating essentially the same system with a new protocol, right? Like we have some, there's a pile of data, we're going to put some structure around it, great. We're going to, you know, have a new way to interact with it, great. But, you know, the fundamental problem that we have is that just being able to have a pile of data that everyone can get at doesn't seem to be sufficient in order to resolve everyone's needs. And so, you know, you guys mentioned privacy briefly, but, you know, privacy comes up over and over again as a really critical element of what's missing from the Whois debate today. And you know this it's not at all clear that I mean that's so that should be a core requirement if we're trying to solve these things as opposed to a secondary one. And the other thing that's coming, if you look at like the Whois review team, they mention, you know, like the distinction between contactability and data availability. And you know, I think the technical community could be thinking about, you know, is there a way to address bridging that gap as opposed to just saying, okay, here's a pile of data and we're going to give people access to it again, because we, you know, we keep doing that over and over again, and it doesn't seem like a very interesting solution to the set of problems we have.
And there are lots of people that want to speak, so please be brief. Andrew?
I have two responses to that, or two things I want to draw out. The first thing is that the protocol is just a data access protocol, but by structuring the data, we actually could provide differential access to different people. That's actually part of the reason that we would like to do that. But who gets what data and so on, that is, from the protocol level's point of view, just a policy matter, and it's none of our business. So the goal is to provide those things, but we've already done that before. We've done these other things. You're right about the first thing, and that is that there isn't, as far as
those of us who are just propeller heads can tell, there isn't consensus in the ICANN community about whether it's really pressing to replace that protocol. And that is actually the reason for the skepticism within some people in the IETF against doing the names work right now, because we don't know whether it's going to succeed for exactly those reasons.
Jim?
So you made the comment that this is about supporting IDNs, and I want to clarify that statement just a little bit, because actually the problem is broader than that, and I think that we actually are taking a significant step forward here by doing what we're suggesting to do here. This is about internationalization, which is more than just international domain names, okay? Because it's also about the data, the registration data itself, and what you need to do to it and to be able to store it. Now, you could argue that the EPP protocol and what's going on in the registration process does actually support that to some extent. Certainly all the tools are there to make that happen, but there is no opportunity for a standardized and uniform way to display that data, nor to query data which has been internationalized, and that's a significant issue. Our big assertion here in trying to promote and progress a structure in taxonomy is to be able to separate these discussions. I think there's a really important and huge win in being able to pull out the data and decide what it is, talk about what it needs to be, and then recognize that it does all have to be tagged with language and script, and so that that's there. Okay. Having separately to talk about services and being able to build something which will then display that data and leaving things the way that they are is really important, and I think that's a huge step forward. It gets us more in the community than we had before. All the rest of the discussions that you're talking about, those have to be had. We do have to have those policy discussions about who gets what access and when and by what means. And this is not intended to solve those problems, but it's intended to scope them into a spot where they can be talked about and not disturbed going forward with things that we really do need today.
Yeah, Wilfried Weber from the numbers neck of the wood originally, and on the RT4. A couple of observations here. First of all, I fully support your statement, your most recent statement about the stuff that the whole system has to, rather sooner than later, support internationalized data. This is not just related or limited to IDN domain names. That has to be supported across the board. The second observation is that being involved in the RIR business and in the numbers registry stuff, at first glance, we always think that we don't have anything to do with the names people. That first impression is blatantly wrong, because even in the numbers registry, we are keeping and maintaining domain name registration data for the reverse delegation tree. So we are definitely interested to sort of see something which is applicable to the names world and is as well applicable to the numbers world, because there is no good reason to try to do two different things for something which is very similar, sort of just as a statement, as an observation. The second observation, and I would have a long list of things, but I try to be brief, is that the statement there was no implementation of the previous modernized WHOIS things. There were implementations. The RIPE NCC was actually running a service for CRISP IRIS stuff, and it was more or less complete, but the community sort of decided not to use it. And I don't know what the length of the service viability was. I think it was 2 years or something like that, give or take. And my personal assessment is that one of the reasons why this attempt failed was the fact that it was not backward compatible with the installed base. So I would not want to argue for keeping 43 alive perpetually, but it might be useful to think about mechanisms to make the existing installed base sort of, or the new stuff, backward compatible with what we've out there. And the last thing is actually a question to everyone. Assuming that the IETF process fails in the sense that the IETF would not accommodate a new working group, what would be an alternative heaven or an alternative umbrella to do the work that needs to be done? I'm pretty sure that the work needs to be done, whether the IETF agrees or not.
Andrew? Just on that last point, I'll be very short. It's not, the IETF is not saying that the work doesn't need to be done. What the IETF is saying, under some, the skeptics who are pushing back are saying, we don't think it's going to get done. We think it's important and valuable, and it ought to be done, but we don't think that those guys are going to get it done, and that's a different problem.
Jim?
And I would prefer not to be thinking about backup plans, because I think it does need to happen, and I think that there's a greater confluence now of activities and needs and requirements coming together than we've had in the past. I'm hopeful that that will lead to success this time around, but, you know, only time will tell, so we'll see.
Hello,
please.
This is Iftikhar from Pakistan. I have one question from Andrew. As Andrew said that WHOIS protocol is already replaced three times. Now ICANN team is reinitiating the replacement process. What is the probability of success in the current replacement? My second question to the San Francisco, that what is the role of testbed for WHOIS protocol? You said that the testbed is established for the WHOIS protocol. What is the main activities, or what are the role of this testbed?
Francisco, is this William?
I'm sorry, I could not hear the question.
I said that Andrew said that San Francisco is overlooking the testbed for WHOIS protocol. So what is the function of the testbed? What is the role in this replacement?
Oh, so I think what Andrew mentioned was that Steve and I work on a pilot implementation of RESTful WHOIS for names. That's what Andrew was mentioning before. We haven't put this public. We probably should, I guess, in order to give people a look and feel of what could it be. But that was what Andrew mentioned.
Jim?
So to respond directly to your question of what is the probability of success this time, rather than try to give you one, I'll make some observations for you. Things succeed when people participate, they insist that they want it, and they use it. And that's really what Andrew has been referring here. I mean, we've had three examples of replacements for the WHOIS protocol. They've just never really got traction because nobody wanted to offer them and nobody would use them. The only observation that I make is I think that there is a greater expressed need now for a replacement, notably because of internationalization. And I think that this community really has to drive that and really has to participate. We need more people in the WEIRDS working group, in the IETF. And to do that, you only have to be on the mailing list. Doesn't require any other participation but that is the way that makes that work. And also in the ICANN community here, there are opportunities for WHOIS discussions and WHOIS work, activities, various working groups doing various things. You have to get engaged. You have to talk. You have to say that you need this. If internationalization matters to you, then you have to make this work happen, and you have to make it successful.
Francisco.
Yes, regarding the participation in the current effort in the IETF, I just wanted to mention that there has been already a few engineers from different name registries that have shown interest in participating and actually have been involved in discussions. I'm talking about engineers from big name registries, Verisign, Afilias, Newstar, CCTLDs also, CNIC, Dodemex, Nominate, and I'm probably missing others, OS Registry over there, and CentralNIC, I believe, too. So there are already a growing community that is trying to make this happen, but it would be great to have more participants in the IETF effort.
Sorry, I missed you.
Oh, that's okay. I just like to come back to the issue of sort of splitting the issues which are part of the whole game, but making it more accessible to find a solution. One of the things that boiled down yesterday during the RT4 internal working group meeting was that the very fundamental question of what sort of data should be there, how the structure should be, and how it should be displayed. That's actually independent from the transport protocol. And this is something that we are going sort of to most probably have somewhere in our RT4 final report, sort of trying to make it obvious that this whole internationalization thingy needs to be tackled, whether it is in the traditional framework of old Whois port 43 or whether it's in the framework of a replacement or a developing thing. It doesn't make any difference. We have to deal with that very special problem. And in the vicinity of that, I'd like to come back to one of the statements in one of the very early slides, that there are different sort of consumer needs or consumer expectations for the various constituencies like law enforcement and private citizens. What we found pretty early in our work is that it is not that clear-cut. So there is not really a concise definition of what is law enforcement. That's one of the reasons why we ended up with a phrase like law enforcement and the security industry. That's probably going to be a phrase used in the final report. And the reason is that in some countries, law enforcement is really law enforcement in the traditional sense. In other countries, actually, the entities doing the day-to-day work for the sort of low-hanging cases is actually not law enforcement. It's entities that are established as private entities, private companies. And then, as this gentleman properly pointed out, there is also the security gangs, and they are not necessarily law enforcement. In some countries they are, in some pockets they are, in some others they are just anonymous help yourself groups. And so it will be pretty difficult to come up with a concise definition of this is law enforcement, this is domainers, this is the man in the streets or the woman in the streets. Just as an observation. Thank you.
Hello. My name's Benedict. Can you hear me on this?
Yeah.
I'm a representative of law enforcement. I think probably the only one left come Thursday.
There is one. Oh, there you are. Hi, Tamara.
Haven't put my glasses on this morning. So we've thought and mulled a lot over this, and I think whilst we haven't come to an answer, I think I've at least defined the problem. And so the issue is this: that law enforcement have due process, which is a way for legitimate reasons to get information that is normally private. So they can serve due process normally in their country via a relatively simple process to obtain information that a company stores about its customers to prevent or detect, more normally, to detect a crime after it's happened. Okay? So law enforcement uniquely has that structure. So so if we're talking about having a whois that has an opt-out, which seems to be the general feeling this week, then law enforcement only is going to have access to that, to what was previously public information. So the question is there any way of phrasing some regulation around this to give access to whois to people that should and ought to have it in order to keep the network secure? And I've got no answer to this at all, and I was wondering, it's always been a perennial problem of how to recognise law enforcement and whether we try to distinguish between law enforcement that are trusted and law enforcement that are not trusted, or does that question even make sense?
Andrew? Part of the difficulty, it's Andrew again, part of, for the transcript, part of the difficulty that we have with the existing Whois service is that there is no query-side authentication. That is, you have no idea who is sending you the query. There's no way to tell. It's completely anonymous, and it's uncontrolled. There is nothing we can do, given the protocol that exists, to fix that. Now, I have personal views about what data ought to be public and not in the Whois, but as far as I'm concerned, that's a policy matter that, as a protocol geek, I don't care about. But as a protocol geek, what I care about is providing the structure by which those differentiations could be made. And in fact, by using something like WIRDS or some of the previous answers that have already been standardized, we could, for instance, provide different kinds of data to different kinds of people. Male anti-abuse people, I can speak about that a little bit. Male anti-abuse people, for instance, don't really care who owns a domain name. What they care about, right, is the registrant of name A the same as the registrant of name B, which is the same as registrant C or name C? That is a different question than who is this guy? And by separating out those things and providing the technical mechanisms by which those things could be answered differentially, we increase the ability of the protocol to solve or to support these different policy answers. So the goal of the protocol level development is actually to make those kinds of differential queries possible, whereas in the policy question, that's a different matter. Who gets to do this and all the rest of it? It's not my problem.
Thank you very much, and that's very clear. I think, although I feel that's kind of a long way off, and in law enforcement we're going to be resigning ourselves to manual queries or to the god-awful MLAT process for a long time to come.
So it may be a long way off, just to pick up on that, it may be a long way off from the policy point of view because there was a PDP on there, and as far as I can tell, those are actually infinite in length. But from the protocol point of view, Andy Newton, who has been working on this, sort of wrote down one day on the mailing list, well, this is roughly what I think the names thing ought to do. And by the next afternoon, so 24 hours later, somebody posted to the list, well, I've implemented that one. Here you go. The point of the now, you know, it's not final. This was the whole point of this was to illustrate that a RESTful system is relatively easy to implement. So one of the complaints about IRIS the last time was I need a 6-month budget of 8 developers in order to develop IRIS servers. And what we have just proven by example is that what you need is like 4 hours this afternoon, and you can build something that'll kind of work. It won't run at internet scale, but at least you can implement it. So we would like to solve, part of the goal of this project is to solve that.
Yeah.
Sir, I just want to make one little follow-up because I'm also hearing a little bit of a cultural thing. You know, we're talking about using your expression, propeller heads. Well, when port 43 in the WHOIS protocol, it had very specific design, concepts around it. One was simply openness. What I'm talking about is that there was no, it was never built in restrictions, who can access the WHOIS data, etc. Now you're talking about, we have a lot of hosting providers that are ready to jump on board with a brand new protocol so that they can implement these new technologies. But I just want to point out that those original 10,000 propeller heads who had a reason for WHOIS, you know, when we're talking about there's new needs out there, well, yes, there might be millions of new queries, as the gentleman from Aaron mentioned, but these are a different type of people, a different type of need, and we can't forget that the original need of those original 10,000 propeller heads are served by the original protocol. And the biggest problem that we have with that protocol is simply that there hasn't been the standards of how that data should be rendered, displayed, and I think that's a critical issue that we can talk back into on protocols.
Now I put myself in the queue. To some degree, I would like to add where I agree with you is the protocol itself does not include any authentication mechanisms that can be used for authorization to access data. But there were absolutely the ability for people to know that what was available over WHOIS is something, just like you say, that was available for everyone. So it's still the case that you have two levels of access to the data. Either it is available in WHOIS or it's not. So it's not the case that everything was available.
Andrew
first. I missed Andrew. Sorry.
Just one more thing on the history. Historically, it's simply false that the WHOIS was designed to do what we use it for today. That is a myth, and it's a pernicious one. The WHOIS was created for the ARPANET. We knew who everybody was. The list of people were published on a piece of paper that mimeographed and sent around to every site. And you were talking about the site managers, not the people on there, right? The site manager was like MIT. It's a guy at MIT because he's running the network. It's an experimental network, and you know who everybody is. That is not the condition of the network today. And the idea that we have this protocol and we've had it and therefore we have to inherit it and continue to use it is simply false.
Okay, Arturo Servin from LACNIC. Also, we are a WHOIS operator. It's extremadly, it's a nightmare to maintain that code. If you, right now, you want to build a registrar or another RRR, for example, or a NRR, it will be a nightmare for them to run a WHOIS because the code, I don't know where is it, is very old. Our experience, after the we published the draft, we built a prototype in less than a month, and I'm a very lousy programmer, and I built an API in a weekend. So really, APIs and the HTTP protocol, I think, is the way. Also, it let us build other kind of things like applications, authentication, to build privacy, because we have the protocol that can do that with certificates. We can verify who is accessing the data and to give them special access to other kind of data if the policy allows that. And also we can do the redirection, right? That right now is awful difficult in Hui. So I just want to point out what Andy said, that yeah, and the other people that build the prototype in just 1 week was Byron from APNIC, that it just make a trick and implement a draft in just 1 day. So
I think we are coming close to the top of the hour, so I would like to give the panelists an ability to give a last statement. But I see that there is quite a lot of interest here, and I hope that your interest implies that all of you that have been speaking actually are members of this mailing list where the discussion is really going on. And with that, should we start with you, Jim?
Sure. Thank you. I welcome everyone here and the participation we had here. And as Patrick said, my closing comment is please to encourage you to continue to participate, find your way onto the mailing list. I'm here representing the SAC 51 document. So speaking to that, we're trying to propose this new terminology and structure as a way to separate discussions. One of the fundamental problems that we think we have whenever we talk about who is you get a group of people in the room, they have different requirements, they're talking about different things. And I would strongly urge people to really look at this document, look at the terminology, think about it, and either start to use it or come back and talk to us if you think we need something different so that we can fix it. I think it's important and essential to making forward progress. Thanks.
Andrew?
Thank you. I want to thank everybody for listening to the ranting geek up here today, because I appreciate it. I believe that one of the things that caused us difficulty in the past was that the protocol and policy communities have not talked to each other enough. So I very, very strongly encourage people who have needs, you have the needs, I got the protocol, but you got the needs, to come and make sure that we don't overlook it again, right? Because if we start building this stuff and we get it wrong again, it's going to be even harder the next time around to get it right.
Francesco.
Thank you, Patrick. I just wanted to reiterate about the protocol. The idea is to have a protocol that enables policy decisions, not a protocol that dictates the policy decisions. So we could have a protocol that enables the different policymakers, depending on if you are a CCTLD or a GTLD or whatever, you will have the policy that you want to implement. And I will also reiterate the invitation to participate in the ITF forum and to provide comment in the public comment forum for the roadmap. Thank you.
And with that, I would like to thank everyone for coming to this session and look forward to future discussions. Thank you very much.